Well, to solve these really major environmental problems that we have around the world, I think it requires a partnership. It requires a partnership of scientists who discover the problems and discover how best they might be resolved. And then it requires working with managers and politicians to implement that information. So scientists aren't going to be able to solve all the problems. Our role, I think, is to understand the dimensions of the problems, the severity of the problems, and then work with politicians and managers toward finding the solutions that we need.
You gave a presentation at Griffith University's Australian Rivers Institute, and you highlighted some of the issues with the abuse of the word sustainability. Can you touch on that?
Sustainability is a very good word. It's a word that I think the general public understands. And that's good for scientists as we try to communicate our findings to the general public and to politicians. But it's been used mostly now as an adjective. So there's its use maybe in sustainable development, sustainable environment, sustainable forestry, on and on. And the one that I think is actually kind of funny is sustainable mining. And there's actually an Institute of Sustainable Mining, which to me is an oxymoron. So I think sustainable, from a purely scientific point of view, we have to be careful about how we use it as an adjective. But in terms of communicating the problems and what we want to achieve, it's a perfectly usable concept.
You've been involved in over 40 years of studying the effects of human-induced ecological change within the Hubbard Brook Experimental Forest. How important are these long-term environmental studies? And do you think Australia can improve in this area?
Oh, I think that long-term studies are very important, if not crucial, because they give us insights that we don't get any other way. For example, we may say, oh, this is the warmest day we've ever had, or this is the driest summer we've ever had. And the only way you know whether that's true or not is if you have a record that you can compare that against and say, oh, well, it isn't the warmest day we've had. There have been warmer days. So it gives us those kinds of insights. And I think Australia and other countries around the world need to support long-term studies, not what I would think that many people often think of, just mindless data collecting. We're just going to collect data for no reason whatsoever. We need to collect data for purposes, to answer questions. And I think that we need to understand that those kinds of long-term records will help guide us into those insights about how we deal with these complex environmental problems.
So do you have a vision for the Earth in 2050?
Well, yes, I do. I think we have to do better than we're doing currently. We're on trajectories that are not sustainable. They must be turned around. And in my view, one of the main ways that we can try to turn them around is for us ordinary citizens, of which I am one in the U.S., we have to be able to convince our leaders, our elected leaders in the democratic countries of the world, that they have to realize that these are important problems and that these problems need solutions. There won't be one solution that fits all problems, but they have to be solutions that we work on together, jointly, in partnerships. And by 2050, I hope that we have turned around some of these major problems, like our increasing number of, our increasing amount of carbon dioxide that we're emitting to the atmosphere. We have to cut that back. All the scientific information tells us that that's very important to do. We have to be able to manage our water better than we have. We have to be able to manage our pollution better than we have. And one issue that I think is going to be very severe in the very near future is infectious disease that is enhanced or changed or whatever, we don't know, but is changed by climate change. And so we have to understand how that works and to be able to manage it better so that by 2050 we're living in a safer world in terms of infectious disease.
I just had one more question. It's very inspiring that after you'd finished your PhD 1 year out, you helped set up Hubbard Brook Experimental Forest. How did you do that?
Well, I was lucky. It was serendipity, if you will. I believe in serendipity, and I define that as keeping your eyes, ears, and mind open, and then when you see an opportunity, you jump to try to make that happen. And that's what happened to me. I happened to be in the right place at the right time. It was my interest to do that. I'm an ecosystem ecologist, which means I'd like to look at whole catchments or whole lakes or whole systems together. And that kind of work inspires me. It's fun, it's challenging. And so the Hubbard Brook Ecosystem Study is just that kind of study. It's a whole forested catchment. And we started by being awed by that complexity. How can we study that whole catchment? And so we started with a very simple kind of analogy. It was, could we use the chemistry of stream water draining out of that catchment, much like a physician uses the chemistry of blood and urine to get at the health of the patient? And it worked. So that's been fun. I was lucky.